Okay, the case of Donald Brian Slentz versus the Commonwealth. Have both of you had a chance to sign in yet?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Dorsch, we're ready when you are.
Thank you, sir. Morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. If it may please the court. Okay.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I don't think any is required, Your Honor. I think this is a pretty straightforward case of what are the facts here. Back on December 5th of 2016, in the county of Accomack, there was a driver named Donald Slentz. He was out on the road. Luckily, there's video evidence of what actually happened. So I'm going to argue to the court that there's plain error by the trial court in the county of Accomack.
Though the video's not of great quality, it does show the dust cloud at least once, doesn't it?
So if I may get into that, from minute one to minute 106, you see the police officers coming around a curve. On the eastern shore, there's a lot of curves and shadows. But when the troopers come up behind this vehicle, they're actually underneath a light. So they can see what all of us are seeing from in the car. And what I witnessed, and I have watched that video at least 20 or 30 times with other colleagues, sometimes when you look at something, you can go a little bit crazy inside of your own mind. Am I seeing what I'm actually seeing, which was as Mr. Slentz is coming around that curb in his, I believe it was a Bronco, he takes the curve, and you see just a slight, imperceptible, if at all, the right side of the vehicle, the wheels touch the white line. But objectively speaking, he does not...
You didn't see the dust.
I saw some dust, but what the trooper said is that...
Because I watched it several times, too.
Right. What we see is that the vehicle does not cross over what the trooper says is the fog line onto the grassy shoulder. So if there's dust on the road, so be it. But we can clearly see that the tires do not cross over the line.
Well, counsel, let me just ask you this. All that is required to make a traffic stop is a reasonable suspicion. You're not required proof beyond a reasonable doubt or even probable cause. It's a reasonable suspicion. And based on the trooper's testimony, both troopers' testimony and the video, how is there not a reasonable suspicion or a basis to stop that vehicle for the officer to further inquire and confirm or dispel his belief that he saw twice the vehicle go out of its lane and the other trooper in the back sees the dust? How is there not reasonable suspicion?
Well, I don't think dust is enough, and I think if you're...
Well, dust isn't enough necessarily for a conviction.
No, Your Honor, but the allegation here and what was testified to at the trial is that Trooper, I think it was Mykonos, testified that my client failed to maintain his lane and that he crossed over onto the grassy shoulder, causing a dust-up. He was directly behind Mr. Slentz, and we all have eyes. We could see what the video was showing. He does not cross over the line. At no point does he cross over the line. And I think what would have been prudent for this trooper to do...
But, you know, those are great arguments at the trial court level, and Mr. Northam made them at the trial court level. And the trial judge paid particular attention to the video, and the trooper walked him through the video. And so at this juncture on appeal... Unless we can say that the trial court was plainly wrong or without evidence to support it, those are some factual determinations based on what the witnesses testified to and essentially walked the judge through the video.
Yes, Your Honor. Neal versus Commonwealth, the case back in 1998 from the Virginia Court of Appeals, stated that an isolated instance of even mild weaving within a lane is insufficient to justify an investigatory stop.
And that's within a lane, correct?
within a lane.
The fog lane delineates where the lane ends.
Correct.
And the shoulder begins. So if you cross the fog line, that's not within your lane anymore. Is that a fair statement?
Correct, Your Honor. But, you know, I keep having to hearken back to, we've all seen the video. We've all seen what the officer saw.
No, we haven't seen what the officer saw. We've seen a video depiction of what the dash cam caught. We weren't there. We didn't see what the officer saw. And, you know, videos over time have gotten better and better. But I think you would have to admit that because of the lighting and because of the time of night and because of the placement of the video, we have only seen what the camera allowed us to see. We have not seen what the officer saw.
Well, I'm just going to assume that since we all saw the video, what I at least perceived from watching the video was that between minute one, the officer comes up around the curve in the road in the shadow, and then as soon as they see the dust, but there is no crossing over of a line, the gentleman, Donald Slent, is still within his lane based on the video footage. At that moment, the lights go on and the traffic stop ensues. I think that based on that evidence, the evidence that was presented in court, the evidence that the trial judge used to make his ruling denying the motion to suppress, is plainly wrong. We could all see it. We could all see that the vehicle did not cross over onto the shoulder. He didn't even cross the line. There's an imperceptible maybe acknowledgement that the wheel begins to, as it's coming around the curve, it looked like it touched the line perhaps for a brief second. At that moment, the lights go on and there's a traffic stop made.
I'm looking at a screenshot of what appears to be his right rear wheel that's over the fog line, and that appears to be in a straightaway.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have that to view, but based on what I saw breaking it down from minute one to minute 106, the vehicle did not cross over the line. Thank you. So I think what we have here is that the troopers jumped the gun. Had they waited to observe further how the vehicle was driving, I think at some point, speculatively, they could have had an issue to pull over the driver. I think the pretext for the stop was incorrect.
Well, isn't there a difference between observing vehicle behavior when you're suspecting a DUI versus a vehicle's behavior when you're looking at a traffic offense going outside the lane? Is there a difference?
Yes, of course, Your Honor.
Between the assessment, and doesn't that create a problem for you here?
I think perhaps at 12:35, just after midnight, the officers were looking for people out on the road to pull over that day. I mean, that is,
of course... Well, their subjective intent is irrelevant for Fourth Amendment analysis.
Of course, but I think that played into the reason why they pulled over the vehicle.
I'm not trying to give you a hard time, counsel. All I'm trying to do is get to the... I mean, you know, here at the appellate level, it's very different from what you would argue in the trial court.
Of course, Your Honor. And each person may see the video and the evidence differently. That's why we brought it to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals has allowed counsel to come before this body and thankfully argue this case, because the way that I saw it and the way that, you know, if I could just proffer, my colleague saw it, we watched it over and over and over again. And had any other person been on the road that day, they also would have claimed, I believe, that no infraction was committed. The officers did not testify that the driving was reckless, that there was speeding, that there was...
But that's not the reason for the stop.
That's not the reason. The reason that they gave was that he crossed over onto the grassy shoulder and created a dust up, thus leaving his lane of travel, which was not observed in the video evidence. And that's what we have to rely upon, as the court has to rely upon as the fact finders, to see what the trial court observed and how they made their ruling based on the evidence that was presented.
Okay.
Actually, crossing the fog line maybe is a standard, but weaving even within the lane, it provides sufficient justification for a traffic stop, doesn't it? Under the Neal case that you just cited. Repeated weaving within a lane provides sufficient, reasonable, and articulable suspicion to justify an investigatory stop.
Correct, but it also states that an isolated instance of mild weaving, and we only have between minute 1 and minute 106 from the video cam.
Well, that's all that's captured on the video.
But you can see the trooper's vehicle is, from their perspective, you can see them coming up on Donald Slentz. They are way behind him. They are hitting the accelerator, coming through that dark shoulder around the corner to come up around him. Then the officer's lights are on him, you have a street light, and then you have the illumination of the vehicle that's in front of them, which is the appellant's vehicle. And I didn't even detect an instance of mild weaving. What you have is, during the normal course of driving, when you're going around a curve, he came to the right but did not even appear to come out of the lane. But the road was such that it was creating such a curve that it appeared that it brought the vehicle over minutely into touching the line, but I did not detect him crossing over. So I believe that for the reasonable observer here, there's no probable cause, there's no reasonable suspicion that a traffic infraction has been committed. There was, frankly, no real articulation by the trooper that any law had been broken. What I detected was that 46.2-804 subsection 2, which appears to be cited by the trooper, states that a vehicle shall be driven as nearly as practicable inside of a single lane. Having not left the lane...
Doesn't even technically require that you... cross over the fog line, just that you be on the fog line.
Yes, Your Honor. But I didn't even...
Based on the plain reading of the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. That statute talks about when you're going to change lanes. You have to be inside of a lane as best as you can until you're ready to make your turn. The appellant here was not making a turn. He was coming around a curve. The driving appeared to be... normal and did not appear to break this statute here, did not appear to leave the lane of travel, did not appear to have multiple instances of weaving, let alone one issue of weaving. It appears, as I stated before, that when he's coming around the curb, the car came out a little bit, as cars normally do when they're coming around a curb, and grazed the line, did not come over the line. The tire did not appear to be on the line and did not appear to come over the line, nor did it go into the grassy shoulder, as testified by the trooper. These are all objective things that we can see from the video cam. I mean, at that point when the officer comes behind him, you have all the lights that you need. You have the overhead lamp, you have the illumination from Mr. Slentz, and you have the troopers who spend a lot of time on the road, are trained to notice improper driving. They do a lot of DUI stops, and this does not...
Well, again, I think you're making the Commonwealth's point for them. Part of it is that you have the testimony of two trained law enforcement officers. You've got one who was directly behind the vehicle, and you've got another one who was behind that vehicle, and we have a poor tape video from a camcorder that has limited range and limited ability to capture everything, and you've got a judge who is the trier of fact, and all the arguments you're making now are arguments that your colleague made below. As an appellate court, we're limited as to what we can do because the trier of fact is the one who's listening to the witnesses, and in this instance, not only did the judge view the video, but the trooper walked the judge, even on cross-examination, through the pieces of the video.
And the reason that I'm bringing up the fact that the troopers are trained is they, based on training and understanding what a violation of the law is, I don't believe that they should have pulled over this vehicle. So I think it speaks to the fact that even a layperson can look at this and argue effectively that the vehicle should not have been stopped, let alone trained police officers, Virginia State Troopers, who did not see speeding, reckless driving, multiple instances of weaving inside or outside of the lane. They have one vehicle that comes around the curb, and whether or not they try to explain it to the judge and explain their position, we still have independent video evidence that this court can use to make a determination as to whether or not plain error was committed by this trial court. And I argue that it has been, that plain error is clear for all the reasons that I had stated previously.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson, and I'm here for the Commonwealth. I submit this conviction should be affirmed because the record is pretty clear that there was at least reasonable suspicion, I would submit probable cause, for the traffic stop in this case. As to the plain error argument, a couple things about the facts. First, at appendix page 15, the officer is testifying on direct, and he testifies that the audio and video recording on his patrol car doesn't come on until after he activates his blue lights. So I submit that the officer saw more than is what is captured on the videotape.
Well, but as counsel explains, you can pretty clearly see that when the videotape comes on, there's no car, and then the video, you can see that it didn't come on until he was right behind the car. So
I think, and perhaps I don't want to overstate the record, Your Honor, but it looked to me like the officer was coming up fast and was perhaps pursuing the car and catching up with it. And so I think it would be reasonable to infer from that the officer saw a violation, pursued the car, hit his blue lights when he saw it.
So the decision had already been made to pull the vehicle over.
Yes, Your
Honor.
That's
when the camera starts. And so the view that the officer had leading up to the time of making that decision that the car should be pulled over is not captured on video.
Yes, Your Honor. That's part of my argument.
Although he does, when he's walking the judge through
yes.
it, he says there's where
he goes over.
The line. So
and the court did rely on the videotape, but as we know from sufficiency cases, we can rely on evidence that's in the record, not necessarily what was relied upon by the court. I don't know if the court really needs to reach that because we have the videotape, but for what it's worth, I believe that's pretty clear in the record, or at least a reasonable inference to be drawn from that testimony. Going to the videotape itself, though, which the trial court explicitly relied upon in making its decision to deny the motion to suppress, it's pretty apparent in watching the video that the car, you know, cuts pretty sharply to the right. You see those right tires. And while I agree it's a poor quality video, in Fourth Amendment cases, we give a lot of deference to local law enforcement and local judges. Those local folks kind of know, you know, their area roads. They may know that road's real narrow there and that fog line's real close. So that's another thing that we can look at. And then just looking at the videotape itself without anything else, the trial court's in the position to make that factual finding. That's not something that's second-guessed unless there's absolutely no evidence supporting it. Here, the trial court looked at it. Other people may differ, but that's the trial court's call. Those right tires were over towards the fog line, and that is certainly enough for at least reasonable suspicion.
Well, you would admit that if there was nothing but the video, if there was not a trooper's testimony and a trial judge is looking at a video, and it is apparent from our view of the video that the decision, that the factual decision was plainly wrong, that we could reverse.
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that if that were the case. However, I submit that's not the case here. But as a general proposition of law, yes.
But here we have
agree with
the
that.
Testimony of two eyewitnesses, essentially.
Yes, which can certainly be relied upon by the trial court and by this court. The trial court believed the officers, believed the officers' testimony, and in addition explicitly relied upon that videotape. That does corroborate the officer's account to an extent.
What's your response to opposing counsel's position that it really that the statute that the officer relied on to pull over was not really intended for crossing over a fog line, but was intended for making a turn?
I submit, I don't think that's supported by the plain language of the statute, Your Honor. The plain language of the statute, and I have it available, I believe, but the plain language of the statute indicates that you should travel as much as reasonably practical within a single lane of traffic. And when you cross over a fog line, you're not within a single lane of traffic. You're off the road at that point. I submit that a trained law enforcement officer can see someone's right tires bump over and believe that there's a problem there and that it's time to inquire further. As the trial court noted, an individual could have been the driver could have been having a health problem, could have been falling asleep. I think this was in the small hours, as I recall, the morning. Any number of things could have been going on, and I submit the officer was justified in at the very least, pulling the car over and inquiring further for a brief investigatory stop. Which is exactly what happened here. As I cited in my brief, the federal courts have had occasion to look at this statute, and they have read it to mean that just driving on the fog line is enough. And, of course, those are like Eastern District of Virginia cases.
On the fog line as opposed to
over. And of course, that's only persuasive authority, but I submit those opinions were well-reasoned and brought them to the court's attention for that reason. If the court has other questions, I'm happy to answer them, but that's my position, that there was certainly at least reasonable articulable suspicion, if not probable cause.
What do you think about counsel's reliance on Neal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Neal is a different case. I know the court is familiar with it. In Neal, the question was whether there was reasonable articulable suspicion for DUI. So that was a different issue. Here, the question is whether there was at least reasonable suspicion for a traffic stop, for crossing over a lane of travel. So those are different crimes. And I believe what was said in Neal, if I recall correctly, was that, you know, one little swerve within a lane, staying in the lane, is not necessarily enough reasonable suspicion to pull someone for DUI. Here, however, we have reasonable suspicion for a traffic violation. So that's a different beast altogether.
And in Neal, the court said weaving within the lane
can be. Yes, it can be. Yes, Your Honor. I believe that they cited some out-of-state cases standing for the proposition that a single weave perhaps is not enough, but more than that certainly can be.
I see no other questions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Ask that you affirm.
Mr. Doors, you don't have much time left, but you're welcome to use it if you...
I just wanted to thank the court for taking all the facts into consideration and hearing argument, and it was a pleasure to be here in person. Remember, the last time I argued before this body, it was over a telephone with a bunch of beeps coming in. So it was kind of hard.
Challenging.
So this is much
good
better.
Good to have you here in person.
Good to be here in person, to meet you in person. And thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome. We will step down and greet counsel and then take up the case of Timothy Dale Wadford versus the Commonwealth.
All right.